help me with all of that. Oh yeah, no, you don't want that. I need this. I need this right now. I really need that. So good morning. So I'm so grateful to have somebody else doing the business, and thank you for remembering to say those cards are confidential, and we will never haunt you because of it. I know some people have had bad experiences, but that's not what we do. We're just trying to do our business here and figure it all out and challenge you to look at that as a part of your spiritual practice, because your life will change. You may be up here giving a little Reverend Cheryl kind of testimony if you so choose to do that, because our lives do change when we apply principle to it, when we recognize that we just need to bring a bigger bucket sometimes to what we expect in terms of our joyously receiving. So if you were, raise your hand if you had talent last night and you performed on the stage. No, oh yeah, no. Okay, so come forward. I want everybody to see you really quickly. If you performed last night, come just stand up here really quick. I won't make you stay here long. We had singing, we had guitar playing, we had poetry, you had a dramatic reading from your minister, and we had belly dancing, singing, and guitar, and singing, and James, who injured his arm, couldn't play, but because he's a fine musician. How many of you know James? Yes, James, when I was a brand new minister here, there was a gig going on in that room, and I came here on a Saturday night, which is hard for me to do. I like to go to bed, you know, 8:30 on Saturday. And I heard James play, and the beautiful thing is, James said, you know, I haven't played since then. And so he came back, and he closed the circle, and we look forward to you doing more. So let's give it a hand to the people that came and performed last night. Thank you so much. You may be seated. Oh my goodness, we have such a good time. We laugh. We had that comedian that did the book that I can't say on the pulpit. Oh my goodness, she was so funny. She wrapped up the show. My husband emceed. Thank you, baby. You are wonderful. Oh, there you are. Oh, I just kissed somebody else behind you. Changed their seat. So, good morning. I have something important to say today. The title of my message is Serving What's Holy. And you know, if you know me at all, if you've been around a while, you have heard me say before, there's this gorgeous quotation that has so meaningful to me, and it says, we serve life not because it's broken, but because it's holy. And I like for us to focus on that in every way that we show up and serve and interact with each other and look at life. Because the truth is, we are stewards. And I want us to look at what that serving what is holy through the eyes of stewardship. What does that mean? And we are stewards. And a steward is someone who, and actually nobody is void of this. We have all been given certain accountability areas to be accountable for, whether that's in our personal life, whether that's on your job, or as a member of a family, or as a member of a community. And so I want us to look at that in a real different way today. This is a message that I have been, right, for those of you who have heard me in class, I've been really itching to do this, and I realized that this is the day that we're going to have this talk. There's something in the way we come to the planet, in this way that we're created to be human and have this journey in these beautiful bodies. Sometimes we call it the body temple. And there's something innate in the way that we are created, so perfectly created, that really shows that serving is just in our DNA. We could not serve. We just couldn't. And we're happier when we're involved in life and when we're interacting with other people and when we're sharing our gifts. So there's something really beautiful about that. And this philosophy is one of my favorite, I say that every Sunday, don't I? One of my favorite parts of this philosophy is that way in which I, as your spiritual leader, I notice that every Sunday I intend to instill in you a little more inspiration for this way we can have reverence for life. Because I really get the founder of this philosophy, Dr. Ernest Holmes, really had a great emphasis on appreciating beauty and on taking time to observe the natural order of the way things work in the universe and to see that there are these deep, gorgeous spiritual opportunities for us to expand and to redefine what God is and what is our relationship to the divine. So Ernest Holmes had this really deep appreciation for life. He had a reverence for life, and he loved nature, and he used that for his inspiration. And he says, and I absolutely believe and speak to you often about this, that when we have a moment, an experience, even if it's just the tiniest moment, an experience of beauty, or an experience of peace that we really can't even define. Those are the moments when we have encountered the divine. Those are the moments where we are the closest to God. Those are the intimate moments and opportunities for us to have that true communion with life and with God. Now, I found this quote in one of our favorites, a little book called This Thing Called You, by Ernest Holmes. And this is an old favorite quote of mine. I haven't thought of it in a long time, but listen to how he expresses that reverence in these words. In the peace of God, I feel the love of a holy presence. In this consciousness of love, all sense of fear slips away. I see good in everything. God personified in all people and life manifest in every event. Feel the love of a holy presence. These are gorgeous words spoken from an individual who really understood what that divine connection was and really knew how to show up and serve life in all of its holiness. So I want to talk about that, about using that as sort of our lead-in to having a new look at what it means to be a steward. Because there's a lot of different definitions of what it means to be a good steward. And I don't like any of them that make me feel guilty or that like I'm not doing enough. So I've worked very carefully to try and create a message that's hearable, you know, that will keep you involved in it. And I also wanted to mention that on Friday night, I had a very wonderful privilege to attend an installation ceremony for a brand new CSL center. Scottsdale Center for Spiritual Living is a fully installed center now. Their minister is Reverend Jill Clements. She's a new spunky, vibrant, just a beautiful face for our movement. And I was asked to be the installing minister. Now, I want to tell you that it's just a privilege to sit in any of those ceremonies, because what happens is, and many of you, how many of you were here for the installation that unfolded at this center? Quite a few of you. Lovely. So it's a really big deal. It's sort of, we always say, it's sort of where the congregation marries the minister, where we come together and we make a really full commitment to each other. And it's nice to do that before the excitement wears off, you know. But it's so inspiring. As a minister, I love hearing those words of commitment spoken again and again. And it was my privilege to give the charge to not only the minister, but her board of trustees, as well as her practitioners, and then all the members. They have 51 founding members. They all got special certificates because it's a brand new work. And what a joy it is. So I'm sort of excited. It's been a thrilling couple of weeks for me, it really has. Sort of excited and feeling that refreshed commitment to ministry and this work, and this commitment that I have made in my own personal life to serve what's holy. So I did all my work. In fact, I probably wrote 3 talks this week, and it was just way too much information for the short time I'm allotted. And I took a break yesterday. I was trying to put it all together and figure out what to thin out, and I came in the other room to have a walk and refill my ice water, and I said to my husband, it's like, woo, I can't seem to get out of there today. I'm really working it. I really have this idea of how I want it to go. And he said to me, well, of course this is hard. It's stewardship. Nobody wants to hear about money. And I said, holy cow, he's been married to a minister for like since 2007. How many years is that? Somebody name it. Like a long time. And before that, I was a practitioner. And, you know, and granted, he may not be sitting in a pew if his wife, well, never mind. I looked at him and I said, that's it. That's exactly it. That's the first place we all go when we hear those words. We do the same thing with prosperity. You know, one of the great, beautiful things we teach in this philosophy is that it's good to have a prosperity consciousness. You just don't notice in the world. You do not run into a bunch of Reverend Cheryls out there. You know, and well, I say that's too bad. There should be more Reverend Cheryls out in the world. But what we give is a different take on who we are and what's possible for our lives. And we all do that in a way that works for us. So we all have a different sized bucket, but we're all working the same plan. So I was looking at the idea, and when Hugh said that, I went, that's exactly it. We go straight to the idea of money. And I'm going to tell you something. I think that the discussions around money are really, really valuable for us because it brings up all your stuff. You know, we have a high energy around money. And even if you don't, the world does. You know, there's a whole section in the newspaper dedicated to it. And so we learn as we take classes and study, not just here, but in any metaphysical or new thought setting, all of unity and the same thing, we read all the same authors, we learn that there is this thing called the law of circulation, where we take the teachings of Jesus and we talk about giving and receiving and how it is done unto you as you believe, and we apply that all in terms of grooming, stretching, if you will, our own consciousness so that we can begin to embody greater possibilities. Reverend Cheryl, you said something that just knocked my socks off. You said, if I can imagine it, I'm living life too small. Do you know? Because that means you're not reaching out to that which you don't know yet. You're not tapping into the divine imagination. And it is hard to think better and greater and more possibilities and potentials. So we teach this stuff, and then we have examples of things. And I'll tell you, Reverend Cheryl, most of us start with parking spaces and green lights. We don't jump right to the big cruise. But you see what we mean then by what you're willing to imagine and how much we're willing to grow. And so money is a great teaching tool because we all have opinions about it, even if you don't realize. And we have a lot of hidden beliefs around money as well. So, you know, it really boils down to this idea of the law of circulation. So when we look at what stewardship is, I want you to begin to see that this is not, money is important, and certainly a stewardship campaign for a spiritual center, we just want to get the budget made. You know, we just want to begin to really stretch, because we're stretching this year. We put down goals, and this education program is very thrilling for me. And I want you to, I can't tell you yet because it's in the works, but I'm so excited because even as we just spoke about it, something magnificent came to us this week. And when it's firm, I will share it with you, but I couldn't be happier. You guys have all been hearing me talk about what I think is possible for us. The talk I gave last Sunday was like immediately responded to by this great gift of the Father. It is the Father's good pleasure. What was that word you used? You didn't say pleasure.
Great pleasure.
Oh, great pleasure. Father's great pleasure. So stewardship. If you look at the definition, stewardship can be applied to the environment, to nature, to economics, to health, to property, to information, to theology, and most important, to et cetera. Because et cetera, what is that? Et cetera, et cetera. To more, and there is more. I love being grateful for all the good in my life, and I love that I stop on that note, and there is more. There is always more. So it does certainly start in gratitude, but look at all those ways. I think there were seven things I named off, not counting the et cetera. And these are areas where we can have greater and greater potential for the experience of good in our life if we practice good stewardship. Now, Peter Block, who's a business consultant, leadership, a great model for leadership, Peter Block said, stewardship is the willingness to be held accountable for the well-being of a larger organization, and we do that through service rather than through control. I love that line. So we are all given a little piece of life that is ours, right? And then we're responsible for ours. And we all have different ideas of what our life should look like. And there's no certain rules, although there are a lot of unspoken things in terms of proper. Fortunately, I don't do well with proper. So you have another example you could look at. I try. I really do. You know I do. But proper doesn't fit me very well. And so we have this opportunity to look sort of at ownership. Now, when it comes to our spiritual center, if you are a member here, you own this place. You own this place. And so how does an owner show up, you know? So there are things that have to be done, and there are things that we care about. Everybody here would desire for the building to be attractive inside and out, you know? We want our own homes. I love how you piggybacked on right what I was going to say. In our own homes, we want our homes to be inviting, you know? We want to be comfortable in our homes. We want to feel safe in our homes. And then there's the planet, you know, nobody wants bad for the planet. I've been thinking about that lately. I don't think anybody wants bad. I mean, maybe we get sidetracked with the way our decisions, maybe there's a little greed sometimes in what happens, but we all want to know that our grandchildren and their grandchildren will have a place that can sustain them still. So we're always looking at being good stewards of all those things. I would even say that it is useful to look at the idea of being a good steward to your body temple, right? You've been given this. So what do you want to do with it? And what does that mean to you? And I like that better than self-care. I was thinking that a lot of times I think of self-care there are people that have a real emphasis in their life, and I think it's an old church thing, of being humble, of having a great deal of humility. And sometimes I observe that gets in our way of seeing the greatness of the self and our ability to then recognize the way we connect each individualized expression of the divine as we are, but we connect to the greater whole. We're all a part of a greater whole. And so as we look at our relationships and as we look at the way we respond to some of these terms, it gives us a lot to think about. I think the biggest question is, you know, and we are a great service community. We do volunteer work. I'm so grateful and impressed again and again by the way the members of this community, and even if you're not a member, people just want to help. People show up, and there's great joy in the work that we do when we come together in that way. So I would say, ask yourself, why do you serve? Why do you do anything? You know, why? What is that call? And we know that that's the rich question right now. Find out what your why is, and then let that lead you. And then once you know your why, you can choose an attitude as to how you're going to show up. And I love to give in joy. You know, don't ever drop your offering in the plate less than joy. Let your heart be filled with joy that whatever it is that you're grateful that you can do that. And whatever your service is, it should be not burdensome. If we do it in service rather than just trying to be helpful, we will begin to understand what it means that we serve life because it's holy. We serve life because it's precious. Our attitude means everything. I had an opportunity a while back when my husband and I were, he was working in Indonesia, I was doing pilgrimage, and we lived in South Jakarta, and a couple times a week we would drive all the way to the big city, to Jakarta. It was a good hour or more away depending on traffic, just so we could eat. We had been gone so long, we started getting homesick and we wanted some familiar food to eat. So we would drive to the big city and we would eat at places, don't laugh, but like Chili's, you know, or TGI Fridays or Planet Hollywood, anything just to get a familiar taste. And even then it was tricky because they don't have the same meat that we do and they don't use the same sauces that they like in the West and all of that. But we would go out to one particular restaurant that we frequented, and every night when we would leave there, there was an older Indonesian woman who was sitting off to the side, and she had spread out a piece of batik fabric, and she would be sitting there so graciously, the way they wrap themselves, and she had a little basket, and she wouldn't ask for anything, but people would walk by and occasionally drop some money in her little basket. Well, I felt like I was getting to know her because we were there, once or twice a week. And so I said to Hugh one night, I want to give her some money. I'm just feeling like that's an action that I feel called to do, and I want to do that. And so I took a few rupiah, which isn't much money, but I took some rupiah and I dropped it in her basket, and then I scurried back to the car almost a little embarrassed or something. And as soon as I got to Hugh, I said, I didn't do that well. I didn't do that well. I just dropped that money. I didn't even make eye contact with her. And he smiled and he said, you'll have another chance. And so sure enough, it took me a while before I had the courage to do it again, but I kept feeling that call that I wanted to have an encounter with her, and I wanted to put rupiah in her little basket, but I wanted to do it in a different way because I knew I hadn't done it well. And so this one night when I was all geared up to do it, I walked over and I just saw how beautiful she was. I recognized the humanity in her. And even as I walked to her with this great appreciation, she just got more beautiful before my eyes. And when I got close to her, I could see that her eyes were very cataract. And but she had this smile on her face. And we greeted each other. We didn't exchange words at all, and yet we did. You know how that is? Sometimes you communicate even without those words. And I put my little bit of rupiah in her little basket, and I just felt this exchange of love. It was a heart-to-heart encounter, and I went back to the car, and I cried. Because I think for the first time, I understood what it meant to see life not as broken, but to see it as holy. Yes, absolutely. Mother Teresa is a fine example. And sometimes, by the way, she's credited with this quote, but I don't think she said it. It's a little vague. I think it's been around a lot longer than her. But she is one who just got right in the trenches. She worked with the people. She would see where there was need or whatever she was called to do, and she served. She wasn't being helpful. There's a difference between being helpful and actually serving. And the reason I can say, or we say, that she served is because she clearly saw how precious life was, and she served in such a way that she saw people as equals, no matter what their circumstance was. And I think that is the secret to understanding how to serve life as holy. It is that there is, in the act of service, there is a relationship between equals. Now, I want you to think about that for a minute, because what that means is if you see somebody broken, if you see somebody less than you, and you are called to serve because you feel bad for their place in life, you are not seeing them as equals. This is the difference. It is not serving life in such a way as what is holy. In fact, if you are not able, and I say it's an art. I'm working on it all the time. Nobody gets it 100% and does it all the time. But if you can have an encounter with another human being, no matter how different your circumstances may be, and you can see them as whole, as a child of the divine, as an equal partnership in this planet as a human being, even though our lives are quite different, then we are serving what is holy. Because, absolutely, because when we see them less than whole, we are not trusting the integrity of life within that individual. Yeah. I don't know how to tell us how to do it. You know, I don't know how to teach it. But I can tell you, I know there's a difference. It is the place we come from. It is the way that I said earlier that that divine DNA is a pattern within us. We have to serve. We can't not serve. And it is when we find that way to not try and fix people, to not try and change people, to not ever see people less than, in that way, we are responding to the wholeness, to the truth, and we are actually not only responding to life, but we are collaborating with God. We are doing that divine work. Now, I did a little research, and Rachel Naomi Raymond, a lovely woman, wrote that in, and she has some ideas around this as well. Her idea was that there is a difference between helping and serving. And I'm not saying don't help people. We still need to, you know, I have no problem opening a door for somebody that's packaged full or you drop something. I have no problem helping people. But the difference between helping and serving is that, she said, when I help someone, it's likely I'm going to feel satisfied. You know that feeling. It feels good. You feel satisfied. But when you serve life, you will feel gratitude. And gratitude is a quality of God. You know, we talk about having a gratitude practice, but we're just tapping into that which is always there and being grateful for the wholeness and the connection of life. And that's what we teach in this philosophy. We teach wholeness. We teach that God is everywhere present. There is no place that God is not. We teach that God is a power and an essence that is with us, that there is the inward experience, the indwelling God, but there is that which is external as well, that God is everywhere present. There can be no place where God is not, and that we are an extension, that we are individualized lives created out of that divine DNA, and therefore we are a part of the whole. And everything we do here, on this planet, every experience, every relationship, every bump on the road is an opportunity for us to return to that truth, to remember that there's another way of looking, there's another way of serving, there's another way of being good stewards even toward ourselves. Ernest Holmes said, if you can see God in everything, then God looks back at you through everything. You know, it's that idea of namaste. It's that idea of honoring life and of serving life from a very high standard, that we have the ethics of stewardship in such a way that we're able to see God right where we are, and that we can be grateful that we are indeed divine stewards of God's good on this planet. Every act of service is something we do to secure our future. I have a book of matches in my top desk drawer right here, right there. And it says, I helped burn the mortgage October 27th, 1995. I was here, they say. That was 20 years ago. I was in Indonesia when that happened. That was the exact year I was in Indonesia. Wayne, you were waiting for me. Thank you for holding the space, Dorothy. I'm very grateful. So every act of service is a part of how we secure the future, and I want us to honor the history, and I want us to rejoice of the way we are bursting forward into this upcoming year, into this new life, and the way that we are being given. People are drawn here to serve here. It's mind-boggling. It's totally mind-boggling for me, and I just keep saying, thank you, God. I am so grateful, for we have work to do. We have a lot to give, and we have announced our community education program, and next week we're going to tell you something else. And what I know is it's time for us to just do this. It's time for us to join together and to remember that serving is a divine joy. It is a privilege, and we can be grateful for that. Let's take a moment to now anchor ourselves in prayer so that we really set this in motion. I invite you just to get comfortable where you're seated. And now we're just going to allow all these busy words to just sort of fall and scatter around the room. For the essence of truth that they represent is already ours. And as we turn within, we recognize that power and presence. It is that activity of life that has ordered this universe so perfectly that this little planet can sustain life. I feel the love of God within me. I recognize it right here in this sanctuary. And at the very core of every person sitting here. It is the same truth of the presence of love in every person we care about. It is that powerful force in the universe that shines that light that is a guiding and directing light of divine truth. I feel that presence of God here right now as that infinite wisdom of all the universe. And so as we take a moment to just give thanks for the beautiful way our lives do work, the way Spirit shows up and each day we are gifted with a new day, a clean slate. That these bodies that we live in, that they sustain us in a miraculous way. What a blessing that we don't have to think to keep our heart moving or our lungs breathing. And so in this spirit of gratitude, with a fresh perspective on life itself, I just feel that love of God. I recognize that love at the heart of this spiritual community, and I rejoice in all that is ours, in all that has been given to us, and in all that lies ahead. And I speak my word aligned to this law, knowing that indeed the future is blessed with the greatest things we have imagined and those things that we have not even imagined yet. For in God there is so much more. And so we stand in that place of pure potentiality. We stand here knowing that we are healed as we align our minds and our thoughts to the reality of how our physical body works. We are healed every time we see another being whole and complete. We are blessed every time we recognize the presence of love in any relationship, and that we are the conduits to spread that love, to spread this truth of the goodness of God, the presence of intelligence, the unlimited and inexhaustible nature of the givingness of God. It is indeed the Father's very good pleasure to give us the gifts of the kingdom. And so this day we open ourselves to be vessels to receive that good. We stretch ourselves, we open our minds and our hearts, we dare to imagine bigger and greater, and we allow that imagination to be the future for this community. We allow the divine to show us even more what is in store for us as we step into this full stewardship program, knowing that blessings abound everywhere, that we are indeed good stewards in every way, and where there is an area we want to focus on more, that God will shine the light right there so that we can thrive in all ways. I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, Infinite Spirit. Thank you, life, for this opportunity to remember again that life is holy. And so, with a renewed idea of what that holiness is and what it is we are called to be here in the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living, I feel deep gratitude in my heart, and I just release the words of this prayer into that law that always responds, yes, I let it be, and together we say, and so it is. Amen.